Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money, I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. Okay, so we're joined again this week on Politico Money by my friend and colleague Victoria Guida, who covers the Fed for us and also happens to be a reformed trade policy reporter. So we could get into some trade-related stuff, some China stuff with her as well. Victoria, thank you so much again for joining us on Politico Money.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So we're here today to talk about the strange case of President Donald Trump versus Fed Chair Jerome Powell, known to friends and colleagues as Jay. President Trump has gone after Powell repeatedly in recent weeks and months for raising interest rates. He's had lots of somewhat nasty things to say about him in the press, although I think he's feeling a little bit more charitable towards Powell now, and we'll get into why that is. But Victoria, just give us the basic framework for why President Trump and Fed Chair Powell are now somewhat at odds with each other.
Yeah, so fundamentally, the president wants 3% annual growth every year. And that's basically faster than the Fed thinks that the U.S. economy can sustainably grow. And so as long as we are approaching 3% economic growth, the Fed is going to be cautiously raising rates because they want to head off inflation. So there's sort of this fundamental disagreement between them as to how fast the economy should be growing.
And essentially, President Trump has been critical of Powell in these recent interviews, saying at one point, I'm not at all happy with him. He said, I think the Fed has gone loco. And he's accused Powell of trying to step on his economy and slow it down. And it's totally unfair that President Obama got to be president under essentially, you know, zero interest rates. And now poor President Trump has to be president when the Fed is increasing interest rates. But certainly what Powell is doing is not trying to stomp on Donald Trump's economy. What have he and his colleagues at the Fed actually been trying to do with the rate hike campaign that began under Janet Yellen, Powell's predecessor?
Anytime the Fed is going through a rate hike campaign, what they're trying to do is make sure that the economy can keep growing at a sustainable rate. They want to make sure that it's not growing too fast so that inflation goes crazy, but they also don't want to hike too fast and cause a recession. And so the word that economists tend to use is a soft landing, where they basically want the economy to slow down a little bit, but to still keep expanding so that the economic growth can continue for as long as possible without going into a recession. And, you know, it's either good luck or bad luck, depending on your perspective, for President Trump that he happened to come into office right when the Fed was just starting its rate hike campaign after basically nearly a decade of zero interest rates. Probably he's lucky because it means that the economy is doing well. And so that's another really strange thing about this conflict between them, is that fundamentally, when the Fed is raising interest rates, it's actually an endorsement of the strength of the economy. And so he is sort of in this catch-22 where he doesn't want the Fed to be raising interest rates, but he also wants to have a healthy economy.
Right. So the reason I say that President Trump is probably feeling a little bit more generous toward Powell recently, and in fact, his Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, basically came out and said this, that Trump was happy about a recent Powell speech. And in that speech, Powell changed his language a little bit for how far the Fed is away from essentially normalized interest rates. He freaked Wall Street out a few weeks ago when he said they were far below what a neutral rate would be. And he changed that language to just below, which Wall Street really liked, thinking maybe that means there aren't that many rate hikes ahead. We're expecting one next week, and we'll talk more about the meeting next week later. And then the big debate is how many times the Fed hikes interest rates in 2019. Talk to me a little bit about how Powell changed the language there and why Wall Street kind of celebrated that and why Mnuchin said, boy, Trump really liked that speech.
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack from that speech that Powell gave. So as you mentioned, in October, Powell in a Q&A basically off the cuff said, we're pretty far from neutral probably. And as you said, you know, markets took that as kind of a hawkish sign that the Fed was going to hike rates more than they thought. But keep in mind that that was an off-the-cuff comment, whereas in the speech that he gave, this was much more planned out. This was much more vetted. You know, a Fed speech is read by any number of staffers to make sure that they're having the message that they want to come across. The thing that was kind of interesting about markets' reaction to that speech is they took it as a dovish sign. And it's interesting because in some ways that speech was dovish, but not really for the reason that markets seemed to be reacting to. So I've talked to a lot of smart, informed people about this, and it seemed like Chairman Powell in October, when he made that comment about how we're pretty far from neutral, what he really was trying to say is that where interest rates are right now is still boosting the economy. In Fed speak, you know, policy is still accommodative. But instead, they took it as, you know, this was some kind of statement that they're going to be hiking rates more. And then on the other hand, when he was sort of cleaning up his language by saying it was just below the broad range of estimates of where neutral is, they took that as suddenly, you know, we're right near neutral instead of just a factual statement that the range of estimates of where neutral is. And to be clear, the neutral level of interest rates is where, you know, rates are neither boosting nor slowing down economic growth. So when he made that statement that, you know, interest rates right now are just below the neutral level, he meant the broad range of estimates, which is between 2.5% and 3.5%, which is a pretty broad range. So the irony of all of this is that the message coming out of the Fed lately is, hey, don't focus too much on where neutral is. It's a much more useful thing to target when you're farther away from it and the closer that you get to it, because it's an unobservable variable. You know, it's very hard to pinpoint. So the closer you get, the less useful it is as a sort of guiding star. So it's kind of ironic that people are focusing on how close to neutral we are when the whole point of the Fed is that lately, you know, you shouldn't focus on too much on where neutral is.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the initial Powell remarks really weren't that hawkish, and the most recent ones weren't really all that dovish, which reminds me, I think a lot of listeners will know exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about hawks and doves and the Fed and markets. But perhaps we should kind of define that for those who don't and don't necessarily get deeply ensconced in the minutiae of monetary policy as we do. So what is a monetary hawk?
So a monetary hawk is someone who's usually viewed as being more concerned about the inflation side of the mandate. And a dove is someone who's usually much more concerned about the unemployment side of the mandate. And those two things are sort of seen as sort of opposing forces where, you know, you keep rates low in order to boost employment and that can allow inflation to rise. And you raise rates in order to hold back inflation and that can cause unemployment to go up or employment to go down. it's usually whether you have sort of a bigger focus on one or the other side of that equation.
And when the hawks win these battles, the doves, of course, listen to Prince, and it's all about When the Doves Cry, which is at this point that our producer should inject some Prince audio sound right there.
This is what it sounds like.
Okay, so let's get back for a second to, you know, the weirdness of Trump versus Powell. You know, this was somebody, Jay Powell, who was strongly recommended to the president by Steven Mnuchin, his Treasury Secretary. His views on interest rates were well known, that he was, you know, likely to follow along the path that had been set of gradual, gentle interest rate hikes, certainly not some kind of super dove who is going to let the economy under Trump run really hot and never bump up interest rates and not worry about inflation. So, I mean, should President Trump have been at all surprised by Powell doing exactly what he did or has done?
No, he should not have been surprised. I mean, it is possible that Chairman Powell was sold to him as a low rates guy. But it's interesting because I think before taking over as chairman, he was always kind of viewed as not having a particular bias towards one side or the other. And I think that he was just going to continue, you know, along the path of what Chair Yellen had been doing. So I think that might have been the way that he was sold to Trump, because Chair Yellen obviously kept rates very low during her tenure. And so if you're President Trump and you're being told, look, this guy is going to do what Yellen would do on rates, you know, it's possible that he took that as he'll keep them low. But it is interesting that, you know, you hear public statements from people that were considered as Fed chairman, from, you know, Gary Cohn to John Taylor to Janet Yellen herself. And it seems like everybody or all of those people are pretty much on board with what Chairman Powell is doing. They're all basically saying, yeah, this is what you should be doing. Now, going into next year, I think is when it gets a little bit trickier in terms of what the Fed should do. But in terms of what he's done so far, I think that there's pretty broad-based support within Fedland for what he's done.
Let's talk a little bit about how Jay Powell reacts to some of the attacks that are coming from the White House. He's very public criticisms of his policy. He's been very circumspect in his public remarks, simply saying that the Fed is going to continue to do its job as best it can to pursue its mandate, which is, you know, both full employment and also preventing runaway inflation, and that it doesn't take politics into consideration when making interest rate decisions. Do you have a sense at all for kind of what he thinks or how he feels or how he reacts when he sees and hears the president saying all these mean things about him?
He's done what he can to stay away from commenting on the president in any kind of direct way, publicly and privately. He just, you know, very much affirms that he is going to do what he thinks is best for the economy. You know, he said a couple of times in interviews, you know, let's control the controllable, which I think the president's staffers would agree that the president is himself not particularly controllable on message. But yeah, I mean, I think it's probably pretty frustrating for him. I mean, you know, you talk to people that know him well, and I think that they were really frustrated at some of the reaction that you saw in some corners of the market when he when Chairman Powell gave that speech, that he had somehow caved to Trump, because I think that that is pretty much the last thing that Chairman Powell would want markets to think, because the credibility of the institution long term as separate from short term politics is something that really matters to him.
Yeah, I mean, my theory of all of this and how it started was that Powell was sold to Trump in a way as somebody who could be influenced on interest rates, that he would be, if not, you know, overtly, at least kind of covertly subservient and susceptible to pressure to move on rates the way the president wanted to. I think that was a complete misreading of him as a person and as a defender of the Fed as an institution, and that, you know, that has not proved to be the case, and that his cleaning up that language was in no way caving to Trump. It was simply trying to explain to markets exactly where the Fed actually is and is going, and not in any way a reaction to any of the stuff that President Trump had said. But all that said, you know, there has been a little bit of shifting in, you know, both the Fed's own positioning regarding rates next year and in markets' expectations of where rates are going to be going next year. And you wrote a very good piece on this last week suggesting that, you know, President Trump may ultimately get what he wants, which is a somewhat less aggressive Fed on the interest rate hiking campaign. That, you know, we definitely get a hike next week, but then, you know, kind of everything is on the table next year, depending how the economy performs. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, where the Fed is now and how it's looking at next year, and the fact that, you know, President Trump might end up getting what he wants, but not because he's been whining about it.
Right. So we're pretty sure to get another rate hike this month, next week. And after that, you know, obviously in September, Fed officials sort of roughly projected they might need three more hikes next year. But it'll be interesting to see whether that gets adjusted downward. You know, the minutes that came out from this past meeting, they were, you know, pretty pretty nervous about a lot of different risks. I mean, the message out of the Fed is still, you know, risks on both sides are balanced, which basically means there's sort of an equal chance that we might have to go faster and slower. But you're hearing officials from the Fed more and more focus on risks to the downside. So things like slowing economic growth, trade tensions, the potential for funding fights, things like that. And so I think that that's, you know, leading people to think that if there is a change in the dot plot, you know, which is that projection where each of the Fed officials says where they expect rates to go next year, if there is a change, they expect that to be fewer hikes rather than more. But another thing to sort of emphasize is that the main thing that the Fed has been saying is we're data dependent. And of course, the Fed is always data dependent. But, you know, this is a time when basically what they mean by that is they don't know what direction they're going to need to go. Right. So before, when they said they were data dependent, they knew they had to raise rates, but they didn't know how quickly. Whereas now it's like they don't know necessarily which direction to go. However, it does seem like the data dependency line out of the Fed is more toward, well, we've said three rate hikes next year, but don't hold us to that, because it might be less. So that's kind of my read of the situation.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about kind of how complicated a picture the Fed faces right now and the potential threats to the U.S. economy that might cause them to rethink the three and go to two or one, or who knows what they'll have to do. You know, one of them is the fading stimulus from the tax cut bill that Trump and Republicans passed, perhaps not as much juice coming from increased federal spending. And then, of course, you know, the stock market, which has been all over the place recently and has, in fact, been declining in recent days, sometimes quite precipitously. You've got all the major indices now essentially flat or slightly down for 2018. And a lot of this is the result of the trade tensions that you mentioned and Trump's ongoing trade battles on several fronts, but particularly with China. And he had that meeting with Xi Jinping recently in which they had kind of a tenuous agreement to not ratchet up tariffs, you know, from where they are now for 90 days while they try to get this broader agreement made. And markets haven't quite figured out whether such an agreement is likely or the trade war will get worse. And so, you know, the Fed kind of has to take all that into account as it thinks about whether to, you know, boost rates faster or more slowly. How do you think particularly the China battle plays into all of this? I mean, you've covered trade in the past and know a little bit about the history of, you know, the U.S. and China on trade. How much is Powell and how much are the Fed kind of paying attention to the back and forth between Trump and the Chinese? And how might that kind of impact what they are able to do next year?
Yeah, it's huge. And it's huge for a number of reasons. So one of the concerns internationally is just broadly that growth in the Chinese economy is slowing. And because China is such a big economy, if there starts to be more and more headwinds for China, that affects everyone. And obviously, they're an export driven economy. And so the trade tensions with the U.S. can play into that. Also, one of the things that can help keep the economic expansion going is business investment. And if businesses are holding off on investing because they want to see where these trade tensions go, that can also be a headwind. Theoretically, tariffs can also lead to inflation just because, you know, if tariffs lead to higher prices, then that might give other actors further license to feel like they can raise prices too, and it can lead to a pile-on effect. That doesn't appear to be happening from what I can tell, but that's something that the Fed is also watching. And then in terms of, you know, where this goes between the U.S. and China, I mean, you know, I don't follow this as closely anymore as our trade colleagues do, but just from having covered China in the past, you know, this is a really complicated thing to try and get China to make some of these fundamental changes that the U.S. is seeking. I mean, it's interesting to me because it seems like President Trump is very much a, you know, PR marketer driven person where he likes to be able to trumpet, you know, achievements. But China seems to be something that he actually really cares about the results. And that to me is an important dynamic because, you know, let's say the US and China do actually reach an agreement on, you know, intellectual property theft and some of these other really thorny issues with China. I mean, that's something that the US might have to hold China's feet to the fire on, and they will have to hold China's feet to the fire on, because China is very savvy and they find any way that they can in order to, you know, maximize their economic benefits, which can mean, you know, getting out of commitments that they've made. And so all of that to mean, I mean, if the US and China reach a deal, it'll be interesting to me to see whether that's really, you know, okay, everything's fixed, you know, because it seems to me like there would have to be some sort of keeping track of China's progress. And is that going to continue as a cloud, even if they do reach a deal, which in and of itself is sort of an optimistic thing to assume?
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that Trump has invoked his trade fight with China as kind of a reason for Powell and the Fed to hold fire, and said, you know, he said in that Wall Street Journal interview, look, I'm trying to do deals on these big trade issues, particularly with China, and I'm not getting any help from the Fed. But I mean, traditionally, it's not really the Fed's role to, you know, kind of be in the corner of the president of the United States as he's trying to execute some trade strategy, right? Like, it just seems strange to me that he would kind of say, Powell, you got to be a team player here and keep rates low while I do battle with the Chinese. I don't know if you found that weird.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely something that you wouldn't associate with our economic structure. You know, there are a lot of developing countries in which the central bank is more closely tied to, you know, fiscal policy and trade policy. But the U.S. made the decision a long time ago that we didn't really want those things to be tied. So it is certainly very strange from both an American perspective and from sort of a traditional economics perspective of, you know, what is good policy.
All right. Well, let's set up next week, the big Fed meeting and press conference from Chairman Powell. You will, of course, be on the scene. And, you know, we're all expecting the quarter point rate hike to continue the path they've been on. And all eyes will be on the aforementioned dot plot and projections and, you know, language that Powell uses to talk about what next year is going to look like. Like, if you, you know, get a question into Powell, and I hate to put you on the spot, but I will anyway, like, what is top of mind to you? And if you're, you know, sitting there in that press conference and he calls on you, like, what would you be inclined to ask him at this point? I realize it all depends on exactly what they do and the statement and all that kind of stuff. But as of now, what's sort of on your mind to quiz the chairman about?
Well, you know, I think that there's been more and more talk lately about the potential for a recession in 2020. And I think it's important to kind of feel out from him what factors he would be watching to see if that is potentially on the horizon. I mean, the Fed chairman, I don't think, is ever going to say, oh, hey, a recession's coming, because that would obviously...
That would be strange if he did that.
That would really be...
If he just got up there and said, oh, man, we are screwed. 2020 is going to suck. Recession is on the horizon, and damn it, there's nothing that we can do about it. Sorry about that, folks. And then he walks off the stage. But he's probably not going to do that. But anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that would make good television, though. The ensuing stock market crash probably wouldn't be too fun. But but yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing that's looming on everyone's minds is, you know, what are the things that are most likely to mean a recession? I mean, you know, there's also this question about the yield curve, which is, you know, a very wonky topic. But, you know, essentially, if yields on short-term treasury bonds are higher than long-term treasury bonds, that can often be a signal that a recession is coming. And part of the yield curve inverted recently. And so, you know, one of the big questions is, does that mean that a recession is coming? And so the Fed has tended to say, well, you know, this time may be different with the yield curve. But, you know, now that it's sort of started to happen, that's another thing to watch.
Yeah, it would be interesting if he comments on the inverted yield curve. And it makes me think that we should do an entire show dedicated to what the yield curve is, when it's inverted in the past, and what that's meant, and you know, probably put everybody to sleep in the first 6 or 7 minutes of it. But for me, it would be a fascinating thing to do, because I think a lot of people kind of casually throw inverted yield curve into the conversations and don't necessarily know what they're talking about. But an interesting topic. Let me ask you lastly whether you would be super shocked and surprised if the Fed comes out next week and just says, we're pausing, we're not hiking rates. I've been kind of looking at the Wall Street expectations for that, and it's still high, but it's not. I mean, I think it was in the 90s and close to 100% relatively recently, and has dropped, I think, as low as like 68, 70% or something, that the Fed goes ahead with a rate hike in December. Would it like blow you away if they didn't hike rates next week?
Yeah, I think that would be pretty surprising unless something big happens between now and then. You know, the Fed is currently in its blackout period, where basically roughly a week or so before the rate setting meetings, they don't talk publicly. And the last speech before that was Lael Brainard on Friday. And I mean, she was pretty upbeat about the economy. She went along with this trend that I've been talking about, where she did kind of flag headwinds a little bit more than maybe she had been. But she still said, you know, she thinks that further gradual rate hikes will be warranted. New York Fed President John Williams had a similar message just a couple of days before that. And so I think that the message from the Fed is that, you know, right now there is not a sign that they need to stop imminently, but they're obviously watching that going forward. There's a lot more time between now and, say, March, when people might expect the next rate hike. And so a lot can change between now and then. But between now and next week, it would be, you know, unless something really crazy happened with the stock market or something, I would be pretty surprised if they didn't hike rates.
Yeah, I mean, I would be too. And I think markets would be. I mean, there would be that initial reaction like, oh, you know, great, rates are going to stay low. But then the second thought among everybody on Wall Street would be, oh my God, what does the Fed know that we don't? And the economy is in real trouble. And I think it might sell off in the face of that, just because there would be such surprise and such panic. Let me ask you, just because it popped into my head, do you enjoy covering the Fed and monetary policy and financial regulation more, or trade more? Like, which is a more fun topic?
You know, I get asked that question all the time. They're very different. I mean, I think that the Fed is kind of fun in that so many people pay attention to it. Obviously, a lot of people pay attention to trade now, but when I was covering it, that wasn't really the case.
Right.
Although I actually also am a little bit relieved sometimes that I don't still cover trade, because it seems so chaotic these days, and that, you know, it's hard to tell what direction anything's going in. But I would say both. I mean, I guess I like my current beat more now because it's just more expansive. But, you know, part of my heart will always be in trade policy.
Yeah, indeed. And I should remind listeners to follow Victoria on Twitter. She's at VTG2. Always has pithy things to say about monetary policy, but also puts the trade hat on from time to time to wisely comment on stuff going on in the trade world. So if you don't follow her, make sure to remedy that. And Victoria, thank you so much for taking some time again to explain all this to us on Politico Money.
Good chatting with you.
That's a wrap for this week's Politico Money. Thanks to my producer, Jenny Ament, and our executive producer is Dave Shaw. If you're liking the show, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Rate us and write a written review. We'll be back with you next week.